gonna miss weekends like this. Summer officially here. I think we would all agree. Ennis and I argue about when it's actually summer. But here in Southern Ontario, this was it. This was officially the start of summer. Being out over the weekend, seeing packed streets, good weather. Yeah, the air isn't great. Air is good. I've noticed that I like good air. I know you come to this show for the big takes, and that is one of them, is air quality becoming more important to me. But we had a lot. Blue Jays are red hot, but they've got one clear problem, and everybody's trying to put their big old brains together and come up with a solution. It's obvious. They got to make a trade. Period. They just called up a guy who's got a ERA in the minors of over 7 and who hasn't pitched a lot. Like, yeah, maybe Turnbull's good eventually. Maybe that works out, but I don't think it's working out right away. And they're in a playoff race. Like, they're not the team, but they're a team. 8-2 in their last 10. Offense is looking good. 3 of their starters look good. Eric Lauer's been fine. Bullpen's great. They're a competitive baseball team. They've figured something out, but you know who hasn't is the starting pitcher with an ERA over 6, who's given up, I think, 19 home runs in 13 innings. It's no good. Can't work it. Can't do it. Gotta go. Gotta find something. I don't think it'll happen by the next trade, but I think it's very much like 2021. You had a team that was in the playoff race, and you had one obvious sore spot, which was the bullpen. They had to address multiple guys there. Easier to find, I think, bullpen arms than it is to just grab a solid starting pitcher from somebody. But yeah, you got to make a trade. You got to get an arm in there that you can trust is going to give you more than a few innings, because you're basically tossing two bullpen games here. Like, I know John Schneider said they're sticking with Bowden Francis, but it's a trade. I don't know how it gets done. I've seen people throw out some crazy names. I think it's too early to be going for the big fish. But there's got to be some stopgap, and it's got to be a trade. You don't have it internally. It's not more bullpen game. You can't do it. You just broke up your starting pitchers because of the bullpen game thing. Yeah, it's just that this is obvious to me. You can't have this guy pitch more games. It's not working. It's run out of time to try to turn it around. And his next start is supposed to be against the Phillies. And I think we know how that's going to go. Anyway, I got thoughts on the NBA Finals. There's Kevin Durant rumors again. But I want to do other rumors first with our friend James Myrtle of The Athletic, who was just at the NHL's Combine. Good morning, sir. How are we?
Good, JD. Good.
Yeah, you got scoops for me? Let's get into the scoops, baby, because a lot of birds were chirping over the last weekend. So let's just start with this. Most interesting conversation that you had that you can share this week from this last week.
Share in right what away. Respect? I'm trying to, yeah. I mean, so I was down in Buffalo at the Combine, yeah. And almost every GM was down there. Almost every agent in the NHL was down there. And free agency 3 weeks away, there was a lot of talk. And there's this offseason is going to be totally wild, because you have so many teams that are desperate to get better, that have tons of cap space. And then you look at free agency, and there's not going to be enough answers for most of the teams. There's going to be a few, but it's almost like musical chairs, except you've got 20 teams playing musical chairs and 5 chairs, you know? So what's going to happen to the teams that don't find a chair, and what are they going to do? And I think the trade market's going to be very, very spicy this year. So most interesting conversation, I'm trying to think where, I mean, from a Leafs perspective, I don't know if you had a chance to see my story this morning or not, but you know, there was more talk about that at the deadline, the Leafs were in additional conversations about moving Mitch Marner other than just the Carolina ones, which I found really, really fascinating. So, you know, it was that process was even more extensive than what we had heard to date.
Can I? I didn't read the story. I hate when you do this to me because I when I wake up in the morning.
It's up early. It's up early in the morning.
I know, but I'm a trauma unit in the morning. Like it's like get the coffee.
Me
and
too.
I'll
send it to you next time.
Yeah. I get your brain going. Get thinking about stuff. Try to get it going. Because I'm up late. I'm same as you. I'm a night owl. I'm watching sports late. I'm putting together thoughts, and so the morning is not the time for me to be ingesting new information. Like. God, poor Armin's sitting back there. He's like, yeah, he knows the worst time to pitch me an idea is in the morning. It was where I'm like, no, none of these ideas work. These are all bad. And then you pitch it to me in the afternoon. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is way better.
It's exactly a good thing you're on the radio in the morning then. I mean, it explains a lot.
Well, here's the thing, man. You got to be before everybody gets the stuff out, right? Like, but it's, yeah, anyway, whatever. This is a different thing altogether. But the Marner stuff to me, I think is like, I saw the report. I talked about the report and I'm very, very loose with it because I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I also don't want to give too much to one report that has not been sourced by other people. But there's idea of like Marner all of a sudden being way more contentious with the Leafs. The part of this that I don't understand with the Marner situation that has not been explained to me that I think is left out of this is that on its surface, this is like the Leafs look stupid. It's just true. Marner's wife was pregnant. They were about to have a kid. They're asking him to waive his no move and potentially go to a different city at the trade deadline. Like that was never going to happen. And so what I don't get is why they weren't more aggressive during the offseason when they may have actually had a shot at moving him. Instead of like letting this thing go into the season, all of a sudden recalibrating what they were going to do with the market. And like, I know that no formal offer was made, but they're trying to feel it out and see if something could get done. And it was pretty clear that they couldn't. Marner all of a sudden becomes very non-committal. And yeah, it's hard now not to take what we've learned from these reports and put them and overlay them over top of what we saw in the postseason, which was like, yeah, a guy that I said, I thought looked checked out at times in the Panther series. And so I need that piece of it. Like I need to understand why the Leafs were not more aggressive in the offseason than suddenly get aggressive during a time where nobody thinks that it was going to end up actually happening.
One of the interesting things that I learned was that, you know, Elliott's obviously had the reports out there that the Leafs were trying to work something out with Vegas in the offseason last year, but apparently they were trying to work something out with Vegas during the year too. So, you know, as we're trying to read the tea leaves here over what's going to happen and where the potential destination could be for him, it certainly feels like there's some smoke around Vegas and that they want him, and it feels like a place that he would want to go. So, you know, so at the combine, there's a lot of, well, you know, Kelly McCrimmon and the Golden Knights have been looking at him again and again. And, you know, I took a spin through the Vegas' salary cap situation, and they can make it work. I mean, they got to move out one player and then they're going to have the room to make it happen. So, you know, and they're one of the few teams that's got extra centers to move around. So it's not like they're going to be, if they move out a center, they can make it work. But I think to answer your question is that the Leafs didn't want it out there during the summer last year. So they were kind of like, it was like on the down low that they were looking at some things. But it sounds like they, at least over the last 12 months anyway, they certainly looked at moving Marner multiple times when they realized that they weren't going to be able to get it done.
Okay, so you raised something too that I would like to address before we get into more Marner stuff. So I've heard the take over and over and over again from people of don't make a mistake this offseason because you want to be able to have cap flexibility for the following year when there are more free agents potentially, right? Again, I don't think there's a chance in hell Connor McDavid leaves the Edmonton Oilers. Like, I think that's probably like out of all of the free agent or trade scenarios that I can envision of about the lowest probability. But either way, there's more free agents next year and people will keep looking at this and going, hey, well, you don't want to sign a Sam Bennett because then you're hamstrung for the year later and blah, 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 blah. You get the point of this. What I would just like to say to all of them and, you know, discuss a little bit with you is that, who are the teams that we're hearing about being rumored for Mitch Marner or gearing up for Mitch Marner or, you know, trying to be aggressive in free agency? Florida, Dallas, Vegas. What are these teams all? They're capped out right now. they don't have a ton of cap space. What did you just say, though? They got to move out one player. I think that Toronto, in canvassing this free agent market, and if it becomes like a Sam Bennett or a Brad Marchand, if those guys do hit free agency, and I know there's a lot of talk about Bennett, and we'll get to that, but the idea that Toronto would sign somebody or sign even two guys and all of a sudden not be able to create any flexibility moving forward is a little crazy to me. And I know they have no moves, and I know that they have some other guys that are not as like appealing in the trade market as some of these other places. But my point stands, which is like a good general manager should be able to get creative and be able to create cap space if something does come up that they view as like a must-have piece. And I do think that it's become a little bit of an overrated narrative. And I wonder how you think about that as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, a good front office should be able to create cap space. I mean, the cap's going to go up another $9 million. And
exactly.
So it should be workable if all of a sudden some unnamed $20 million player becomes available. You should be able to create that hole somehow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to get that out of the way because I think it's important for the context of having conversations about any of these other free agents. So yeah, anyway, back to Marner, just cause I'm not done quite there, but yeah, you're right. There seems to be a lot of smoke around Vegas. Do you think it's more likely or less likely at this point that Marner is involved in a sign and trade? Because I've heard both things on that where it's like, yeah, I doubt that actually matters to him at this point. And then it's like, well, if he is going to end up in a place like Vegas, that probably does end up making the most sense.
Yeah. The reason it might be workable with Vegas is they're trying to move something out, and also the talks have been going on for a while between Vegas and the Leafs, right? Like, so they've discussed all kinds of different parameters and things. So maybe there's like some, they can pick up some sort of talks again. The only thing I would say is that those sign and trades can be really hard to do. And there's some acrimony here between the two sides and they would need to work together. So, you know, I think the most likely thing is that the Marner camp wants to go right to July 1, see what all the offers are, and kind of do the song and dance thing on the day of free agency. So you can't really do that with a sign and trade. And I don't know that they're going to be willing to give up that day and have all the suitors come together and put the offers on the table. You know, remember with the Islanders and the Leafs with Tavares, they talked about doing the sign and trade, and it kind of just... it was more complicated than it was probably worth going through to get what was the asset going to be? Second round pick, third round pick, you know, with Gensel going from Carolina to Tampa, it was a third round pick. So I know I had a lot of fans. We put out a call for mailbag questions. I've had a lot of fans saying, why can't they do a sign trade? Why can't they do a sign and trade? Maybe they can, but don't get that excited about it, because it's not going to be some huge asset that the Leafs get.
Yeah. I think that's actually, and I've tried to state this on the show before, but again, not everybody listens to every show. Those of you that do, thank you so much. I love you. I love you the most. But yeah, the idea of a sign and trade is probably like the biggest disconnect between fans right now and the reality of the situation, which is like what would be coming back. And I know that you shouldn't take the worst ones and let them stick in your brain, but that's often what happens. And it's like, yeah, I've asked a bunch of people, what's the value? What would be the return? It's like, yeah, second to third round pick value. That's what you're looking at for Mitch Marner, which is of course better than nothing, but also, yeah, like nothing.
It's not going to fix the problem.
Exactly. In the grand scheme of things, it's really not moving the needle for this team. Okay. So let's do this next one. When it comes to Marner, what's more likely? Bennett to the Leafs or Marner to the Panthers?
Marner to the Panthers, for sure.
Yeah. That's the way the winds are blowing.
Well, everyone at the Combine is saying that Bennett doesn't want to come back home to Toronto. So that one, whereas I think Marner would want to go to Florida. And I know, I think that would definitely be high on his list. So the question is, you look at the Panthers, can they make it work? You know, I think maybe they can, but it would have to be a lower number than everything we've always heard talked about with Marner. So that would be like a double dagger if it ends up happening. I think that they're both long shots, I think, but, you know, just the fact that the willingness of the player is such a huge piece of it, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's get into some of the Bennett stuff, because this has been kicking up a lot now. The Bennett doesn't want to go to Toronto, and Bennett's not leaving Florida, and he's happy there, and they'll figure it out. And Don't even bother, Toronto. Don't even think about it. I've always believed he was going to return to Florida. Like, I've referenced this now a couple of times, but I had a conversation with Ed Jovanovsky probably like 3 months ago. And his position was, as someone who's like very like intimately involved with the Panthers, like knows them very, very well, that they have long viewed him as not just a piece of the team, but as what part of their core identity, and that they've been working all year long to ensure that he is not going to leave. But yeah, it's the Ferris thing and walk to free agency and we'll see. But it feels more like a Stamkos situation where it's like you take a meeting maybe or two, but ultimately end up signing back home for what is a discount compared to what the open market may have offered you. All I have to say to it is I'm a little suspicious of the way that the cycle has gone from, hey, Bennett would play in Toronto to Bennett wouldn't play in Toronto. And I also understand the utilization of this market in particular right now, where there is flux and talk about DNA changes. For a guy that's got 13 goals in the postseason, he kind of needs to have the idea of like, or I shouldn't say needs to, but it behooves him to constantly be in conversations with people in Toronto and push that price up. And I do think that even for him, with his leverage with Florida, there has to at least be the credible threat of leaving if he wants to get what he absolutely deserves. And if he wants to get over like that 7.75 number that seemed to be floated out there for a very long time in Florida, that the best way to do it is to get an offer from somewhere that's like closer to $10 million. And it's like, okay, well, where are the places that are going to do that? It doesn't seem to make sense for most teams. I understand the risk that comes with Bennett at that kind of a number. But I also think the way that this media cycle has gone also has kept his name out there in different ways, has also continued to generate conversations. And I'm not as convinced that he's not going to hit the market and at least explore those opportunities as much as it is like, hey, it's signed, sealed, and delivered that he's going to go back to Florida.
Yeah, but if they're trying to boost the asking price as much as possible, why is it out in so many places that he doesn't want to come to Toronto? I mean, if anything, it should be he's open to anything. And
no, but if you don't want to come somewhere, that means that they have to throw you a more titanic offer.
I don't know. In this case,
what do you mean? I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And then people try to entice you more. That's the move. It's like, oh, come on, man. I don't want to go to the party. Oh, well, I'll pick you up. Like, oh, okay, I guess I'll come. Like, that's what it is.
His number has come up. I would be shocked if he's signing for 7-something in Florida right now. Like, that number's come up just with, you know, and the question is, how high is the number on the open market? And I remember someone saying 10, what was that, like 2 weeks ago or something, and thinking that was bananas. And then you go talk to people at the combine and around the league, and they're like, yeah, no, 10's not out of the question. Not with how much cap space teams have and what teams need. I mean, there's at least 15 NHL teams that need centers right now. And then you look at what's available at center and free agency. I mean, assuming Tavares comes back to Toronto, which I think, frankly, has to be a must for the Leafs because there's just not any other options. You're looking at Matt Duchene, who probably goes back to Dallas, and Bennett. And so if Bennett stays in Florida, there's nothing that teams can do at center. So I think he can get more than 10 as a UFA. You know, it wouldn't surprise me now at 10.5, 10.75, you know, and for a guy that a career high 51 points, but teams feel really desperate right now to make something happen. And he is having, I mean, can you think of another example of a player having a more fortuitous postseason right when they're about to go UFA? Like, it's one of the,
because
one of the best UFA performances in the playoffs we've ever seen.
Yes, and I also factor in the Four Nations, where you know I've had a lot of pushback on this, but I thought that in the final game, and this gets conflated because it gets put out in a clip or a post that it's like Canada's best player is like with my name, and I got all these people tweeting at me being like, "Oh, he wasn't best player, I'm like, he was like absolutely in the conversation for their team's best player in the final against the States, like that final game against the U.S. Who came over the boards every single time and made an impact? It was Sam Bennett, right? Like, he was spectacular in that game. So if you take that and you add it to the postseason, he is now, like, it's inarguable how effective he is in big games. I was texting with you, and a bunch of people, like, former NHL, all kinds of different stuff, about what has the conversation been? Yes, McDavid, but also Sam Bennett. how good he's been in this series. It hasn't stopped. None of these goals have felt like, oh, it's what a fluky goal. It's like he's playing a 200-foot game. He's engaged. He's been incredible. And yeah, do I think that you're likely to overpay free agents? Of course I am. But that's also just free agency to me. You're getting a player for nothing but cap space. That ends up being the loss you take is you overpay a little bit. Like, I'm not as concerned about overpaying Sam Bennett. I would be way more worried about overpaying like Ehlers, right? Like, I'm sorry. I know that the numbers don't bear that out, but the reality of just watching the situation, this is the ultimate. This postseason has been another huge win for the eye test people. I'm sorry. It has been, and it continues to be.
I don't know. I mean, would anyone be surprised if Sam Bennett wins the Conn Smythe right now? I mean, it's another two good games in this final, and if Florida wins, then it feels like he's the favorite. Which,
yeah.
And you looked at like the betting odds, like even like a week ago or 8 or 9 days ago, and he was way down the list. So kudos to anyone if they put money on that one, because yeah, it's just. It's going to be one of those performances that we talk about for a long, long time in the playoffs. And I think it's to the point now where, you know, last week everyone was saying, oh, he's just going to stay in Florida. He's just going to stay in Florida. There's no point in even thinking about it. Everyone around the league. But it's to the point now where the offers might be so big on the open market that he might have to just go see what's there. And the warm and safe $8 million in Florida will always be there, but maybe he needs to go see what else is out there.
Well, not just that. It's like, maybe, I don't know how he's driven. I don't know the guy, but maybe he also ends up feeling like a sense of accomplishment in Florida where he's like, yeah, okay. If he ends up getting two cups there, he's like, all right, maybe it's time for a new challenge where I'm more of the guy, where I do prove to people that I'm worth this kind of money. Like, I don't know, but either way, the Calgary thing does stick out to me though, of, it didn't work for him there in such a like extreme way. That's the thing that hangs over the top of me with the Toronto thing and with the change scenario, where you go, man, do you really want to re-enter a Canadian market, or do you really want to go to an unknown and mess with this happiness and mess with this work? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. Okay, so to Tavares, and then we'll do the trade market, and then I got one other thing for you. You just said it, and that's the feeling I've had the whole way through, which is, yeah, it just doesn't make sense for Toronto to lose this guy, because how are you going to replace him? It doesn't feel as easy. You don't just need one center, right? Like, you need a couple. And so Tavares, at one of these deals that Toronto did with Tanev and now the Lightning did with Gord, feels like the most likely and also smartest outcome, right? Like, hey, sign Tavares, give him a decent total amount, but a super low cap hit. And then eventually when he moves to the wing, which could be as early as next season, frankly, or like, you know, certainly 2 years from now, that it doesn't look all that bad, especially with the rising cap. But then it does stick with the whole like DNA thing, right? The counter being, well, if he does come back, how different is your team going to be if you just lose Marner and replace him with a free agent or two? Is that enough change? I get that side of it as well. But yeah, I guess, have you heard anything different on Tavares? Because I would expect this one to move, like, why not sooner with this one would be my only thing. Like, do you really want to go to July 1st and all of a sudden he's hearing offers from other places? Like, I don't know how this one operates or what the priorities are.
Well, they're wrestling with, I mean, that one's been, coming up with the number and the parameters has been tough. And, you know, the Brock Nelson contract gets signed. I can't remember what day that was, Wednesday or something like that. Colorado gives him 3 years at $7.5 million. And you look at it, and you're like, well, Tavares is a better player than he is, right? So Tavares at minimum on the open market is worth, and similar age too, Tavares at minimum is worth 3 years at $7.5 million. And my understanding is that that's been kind of the talk from his camp all the way along, is that this is, you know, Joe Pavelski signed a deal like that around the same age with around the same goal total. I think he signed 3x7 with Dallas and ended up being a productive player on that contract. So absolutely, I think if Tavares wants to go somewhere else, now the position of the Leafs has been, we need a hometown discount here to make this happen. But I don't know how strong their hand is, because if Tavares leaves, what are they going to do? And it's not like they've got a whole bunch of assets to trade for a center. every other team around the league is looking for centers. I really don't think Bennett's going to happen. I don't think Matt Duchene's going to come here. Mm-hmm. You know, without Tavares, their options are really tough. They're going to be back to, we're going to be talking about William Nylander playing center again.
Mm. I think we're doing that anyway.
Yeah, so to go to your DNA part of the equation, I think that's why it's imperative that you try and bring Tavares in at something like the Tanev number. You know, I think that's the right ballpark. It sounds like, you know, he really wants to stay. So it sounds like his camp's willing to get creative with the contract, willing to do deferred money and all kinds of stuff and signing bonuses. And, you know, and I think there's a smart way to structure it. Maybe you take similar money to what Brock Nelson got, but you stretch it out over a longer term. You put some deferred money in. You can get that cap hit down to 4.5 or less.
Easily. And then Brock Nelson money is $4.5 million over 5 years.
Yes.
Like that's
not hard. Maybe do 6 years and throw in another million or whatever and deferred money. And I think you can get it down under 4, you know, when I was looking at doing the calculations and everything. So if you can get Tavares on a cap hit that's under 4 million, I think you do that all day. And in terms of the DNA, you need to have some real conversations with the coaching staff and say, you know, he can't be our second line center again, playing with William Nylander again in the playoffs. We need to try some different things. And either that is Tavares is your third line center and you got to find someone else and you're building three lines. And then the DNA is changing just because Tavares isn't such a headline piece of your team the way that he has been. Or maybe he's playing on the wing, or maybe he's not on power play one. You know, I think that they're going to have to use him differently, I think, is how you look at changing the DNA. And all of a sudden it's not core four anymore. If Tavares is making 4 or 4.5 million, it's not the core four, right? Like Marner's gone. Tavares is making way less money. You know, Nyes is going to be making more. Riley's going to be making more. You know, there's going to be a bunch of players on the team making more than Tavares. All of a sudden, he's not talked about in the same way.
Yeah. I still think, though, it's not always about just how he's talked about. It's like the issue that I feel has always happened with the Leafs is that there's too many of the same guys personality-wise. And so when you're looking at those top dudes, removing Marner is like, okay, that's part of the change. But then you'd still have three forwards that I think, play a little similar. And okay, his role gets diminished, fine. I just don't know what the actual application of it ends up being. Like how much of that ends up actually happening and whether or not they can replace or add players that do feel like they're just as involved in him, or he is able to kind of just, he used to be the captain, but he's now pivoting into the Joe Pavelski role. We'll see. I think that what you're saying makes the most sense, that 5 or 6 years, get the number as close as you can to 4, and then no one can really push back on it. It takes pressure off him. It takes pressure off the team. And no one looks at that and says, wow, what an overpay or what a mistake that is. Like, it's really hard to see him around $4 million and say, yeah, you're not getting a $4 million production. Of course you're going to be able to get that. Like, even what did Gord get? 2.5?
I think it was like 2.3 or something. It went 6 years. Yeah,
exactly. I just mean, when I look at Yanni Gord, if you told me that Yanni Gord makes a little over half of what Tavares does, I would go, yeah, that's an incredible deal for Toronto. Like, they've done really well. Or if you're $3.5 million per year on the cap under what Brock Nelson is, you're feeling like that's a huge win. I do worry about the feeling of like all these returning players and then the real feeling like, the DNA changed because one guy went out the door. I'm like, yeah, I'm not buying that as much. Which brings me to Riley.
What I was gonna say, JD, that's why the other pieces that you bring in, like, they're gonna have another whatever 15-ish million. The other pieces have to be what's bringing the DNA change. Or you look at, we're going to get to this, or you look at some other things that maybe we haven't even talked about, that maybe you need to move some of these other pieces around.
Well, that's next, which is, from the outset, it was, no, there's no shot of moving Morgan Riley. And then Kipper talked about it, but he was like, yeah, there's absolutely a chance you can move Morgan Riley. Like, you don't want to stay with an organization that flat out doesn't want you. And if Tree Living is going to learn any lesson from the Marner thing, then maybe it was, we've got to be more heavy-handed with some of these players. We can't play Mr. Nice Guy during the offseason. It can't just be all coffee meetings and we love you. it can be a little bit more uncomfortable. We can push these issues a little bit harder. And yeah, I don't see that happening with Matthews. I don't see that happening with Nylander. But I do think that it needs to happen, at least conversationally, with Morgan Riley. And I'm curious if you heard anything or, yeah, people are talking about him.
No. And I think the reason is that his camp had put out there very quickly that there's just no chance that, So I think it would get pretty ugly if they want to go down that path. So the question is it worth it? And is it going to end up in the outcome they want it to? And the other thing I would say to you too is, are there other things they could potentially look at? You know, are there other, they're going to need some things to trade. So the one thing I did hear is that the Leafs are at least contemplating looking at their blue line composition. I don't know if they're going to have time or the resources to make it happen, but you know, there's definitely some thought, and Entry Living alluded to it, that they need someone that can move the puck a little bit better on the back end. So, but I don't know who you move. I mean, you know, McCabe's got the no move, and Tanev's got the no move. And
well, you just signed them as well, and you're not moving either, though. The thing that worked.
Ekman, Larson. Yeah, but if you want to change the DNA of your team, if you want to get someone who's more of a puck mover on the back end, like I don't know who gives you that. But it's at least something that they've talked about. I know that. Yeah. So whether or not you look at available in free agency again on defense, there's no good puck moving defenseman available in free agency. So that would have to be a trade as well. But maybe there's some big blockbuster coming that we're not thinking of right now.
Yeah, I just have a tough time with the blue. Again, it's like, it's so weird. The blue line feels impossible to really change because it's like, okay, if Morgan Riley really won't move it and they view it as too ugly, which I would say, again, posturing matters here. This is just part of the game. The Sam Bennett stuff that I said, and now the Morgan Riley stuff, oh, we would never move it. It's like, okay, except for, is that going to actually prevent you from going down the road and pushing for it? Like, okay, what happens if it gets ugly? If he's so willing, like so unwilling to move it, then how is it ugly at all?
What do you do? You tell him, like,
yeah, we don't want you here anymore. We just don't think that this is a fit.
You go to training camp. He's still refusing to waive. You just don't let him come to camp.
You can't let it get, I think, to that point. But I think that you could at least have an honest conversation and go, We just really feel like this isn't a fit for our team anymore. And I don't understand why a player would desperately want to stay in a situation if the coach and the general manager were like, yeah, things are going to change for you. You're definitely not going to be on the power play anymore. Like, we don't see this role for you. It's just like, okay, you're really going to stay, or wouldn't you rather go prove it somewhere else? But to the other guys, go ahead.
I think it could get there with Riley, maybe, you know, another year or two or something like that. But I just don't think it's there yet. I mean, I think from his perspective, it's that he wants to prove that he can do it and have a better season. And there's family considerations. And, you know, he's just gotten settled here and his wife's from here. And, you know, it's, you know, a young child and everything like that. So, you know, I think he wants to be here and prove that. Leafs fans know Morgan Riley's personality by now. It's, you know, he's a determined person and it's a determined player. And, you know, I think you have to hope that the most realistic thing is that you hope that he has a really big off season and kind of like changes his game a little bit. And I mean, he needs to get moving the way that he used to. Right. And it's harder to do when you're 31 years old than when you're 25. And he needs to change the way that he trains in the off season and be a little bit more like Tavares and realize that he has to change the kind of player that he is. And maybe he can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe he can. The numbers, the information that we have about his foot speed, his high end speed, his average speed, all of it, they're all down. It's just, they do need puck movers and that's what he is supposed to be. But he's just still the guy that I circle and go, this is what makes the most sense. Like, what's the other one? It's Ekman Larson. No, that doesn't make sense.
Carlo? I don't know. Like, maybe if you want to change the composition of your blue line, you're looking at something that you wouldn't think of at first glance. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of the box here.
No, I know. But Carlo actually does kind of feel like the one where you would go, okay, well, you don't feel completely indebted to him. But then it would just be a little strange to flip a guy that you just acquired and then all of a sudden have to be getting a right-handed puck moving defenseman, and then like what Morgan Riley's playing with Simon Benoit, I don't know. And the same thing when it comes to circling Simon Benoit's name, like how are you going to do better on the value of that contract than what Benoit gave you? And if your whole thought is trying to become a little bit more like the Panthers, removing the guy that lays the biggest hits on the team, he and McKay, it just, yeah, it never comes close for me. The only other one when it comes to DNA change that seems like it would be an attractive piece to move in a trade is, do they entertain a deal where they say one of the goalies goes?
Yeah, I don't, goalies don't get you a lot in trades though. That's the thing. Like, yeah, what's
both
the last
guys
trade where you move
such good years?
What's
so
the,
cheap?
I mean, Wolstier wasn't. I mean, he had injuries, and his overall numbers aren't that amazing. And he's got the new contract coming on. And I think Wool probably has more value to keep with the Leafs. Stoller's only got 1 year left on his deal than he does as a trade. I mean, if someone wants to give you something amazing for Joseph Wool, then yeah, maybe you think about it. But I'm not really seeing it. I guess, would you look at trading Stoller's? I mean, there aren't that many teams looking for a goalie either, right? Like, there's no goalies in free agency. There aren't that many teams looking for a goalie. You know, and I was trying to trade John Gibson for 100 years, and I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Leafs, you got to look at absolutely everything. And even though it sounds weird, I think maybe you look at Ekman Larson and Carlo, and you just see, like, can we get a really great second line center for one of these guys? Because if you can, then maybe you have to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, if that was the condition, then sure. I would be reluctant to think that that's what could operate for either, though, given that, yeah, as much as Carlo ended up getting a healthy return from Boston, it was still only, you know, a low ceiling prospect and a first. And with Ekman Larson, I just don't see a team giving up a really significant asset for a guy that's on the wrong side of the aging curve, coming off of, yes, a very good season, but I don't know how many teams would be excited to pay him that, or be like, oh, we really want him as a number four, which I think you kind of got to be at least in the range of to fetch that kind of a price.
The reality is it's hard to change his team's DNA. That's what we're getting at. It's really hard to do. Yeah.
It's extremely hard to do. And that's why the only reason the Tavares thing doesn't make full 100% sense. Anybody should want Tavares at between 4 and 4.5. That is an absolute no-brainer. He just happens to be in the one place where, when you're saying we're setting up the offseason as DNA change, and I get it, a lot of this is just the buzzword that they throw out there. But to me, this one was more of an implied promise. And I do think Tree Living was a little bit more honest in terms of the year-over-year same result thing. That if the fans see the exact same team but minus Mitch Marner and plus Brad Marchand, I don't know if that's like DNA change, bringing in a what's Marchand, 37 or 38? You're going to be
37. Yeah.
Is he a late 37 now, or is he like, he's going to be 38 next year, right? Like, obviously come playoff time, but I mean early.
I don't know if his birthday is off the top of my head. Yeah.
No, you don't know? You don't have care of all the players?
I think it's like early in the year, if I had to guess.
He's 38 next May, so it's a while. He's a young 37. All right. Hooray for him. By the way, last thing before I get into the trades, do you think that he has now become Toronto's number one free agent target, assuming the Bennett stuff is real?
I asked around about it, and it didn't really sound like there's like some hot pursuit of him at this point. But I mean, in my opinion, I think he should be. You know, I look at what's available, and the only thing is that people are saying that Marchand could want $8 million. So, you know, and I don't know if that has term on it or if that's a 1 year deal. I mean, I think if you're the Leafs, I think what you could do with Marchand is you do a 1 year deal. Maybe you put a bunch of bonuses and stuff in it and say, hey, if we get to the third round or we get to the final here, you can have another $2 million or whatever, you know, because I think at that point, the Leafs would take that, you know, they want to see some progress. And the thing that I've seen too, with watching Marchand up close in the second round, when Florida came through here, is that he's the kind of personality with the kind of experience and the ability to play in big games that I think he could be. I think you always call it this, right? Like a culture setter. I mean, he could be someone that changes the DNA. He could be something that injects some swagger and something different. And it's been really interesting watching him go from being a career Bruin to going into Florida. And he said it was a bit weird at first. He was hurt. But it's very clear that he's rubbed off on a lot of the Florida players. And not that they needed more swagger or needed more ability to play in big games, but it's really helped the, you know, like the Anton Lundells and some of the quieter personalities on that team. And it's really given them something special. And, you know, I was really impressed with Brad Marchand, obviously on the ice, but off the ice, I was very impressed with him in that series. And that's why I would be looking at potentially bringing him in Toronto, even if the number is going to be really, really high.
Yeah, I'm with you on a lot of this. My only thought is I wish it would have happened where he was this guy, but for the Leafs 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And I know a lot of people are revisiting this right now, and I'm saying it from the outset. The thing that always drove me nuts about bringing in the Patrick Marleaux of the world and Joe Thornton, There's that clip I've mentioned a million times on the show where it's Jake Muzzin, Stanley Cup champion, talking about the struggles they've had as a team and their inability to bear down. And then Joe Thornton's like, we're in first for a reason. I was like, God, they brought in just horrendous personality mentors for these guys. And it's incredible how much they have become the less successful San Jose Sharks of the Eastern Conference, right? Like at least the Sharks made a final once. They, you know, went on some runs, but yeah, they just really did seem to rub off on those guys that way. And when I look at Marchand and bringing him in, part of my reservation with it is I love the player. I think that he would be successful here. I think that he would have the media and the fans completely eating out of his hand. I think that there would be something nice about stealing the Boston Bruins captain and putting him on the Maple Leafs just to stick it to Boston a little for all the sticking Boston has done to Toronto. It just, in terms of leaving an imprint on the players, maybe it does something for the Nyes, you know, of the world, or like an Easton Cowan. So I shouldn't discount it and be like, oh, there's nobody that could learn a lot. But in terms of this core, I don't know what it does to the older players at this point of their careers. But yeah, I'm for Marchand. 8 sounds way too rich for me. But then you think, like, I think, what did he go to Boston with? 5-5 to try to get it done? 5? Somewhere in that range, right?
No, I think lower? He wanted a raise. I think he wanted more. That was part of the contention. That's why he got traded, is that...
No, but last minute, when he did the, like, famous, here, let's come together, it was more than that.
I don't know the exact number, but I...
Yeah.
He was making his cap. It was like 6.1 something. Yeah. And everything I heard was that he wanted a raise from that. So,
yeah.
You know, and that was a sticking point. I don't know what the last minute talks were, but
yeah.
I feel like the Bruins would have done something in the 5. I mean, they've got tons of cap space and they could have used them next season. So, yeah. I mean, there's some talk that he could even go back there. So, but not if he wants 8.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the other part of it too, though, is like, after he's taken discounts his whole career, you would have to think that what he would want on this final contract, especially if he gets a cup with Florida, is the validation of getting paid. That's the thing he would want to, I would imagine, would be higher on the priority list. Like, hey, I've been really good for a very long time and someone offered me $8 million. I'm taking this because I want to be able to see that 8 by my name. I want to make that money. And I wouldn't blame him for it. Like I really wouldn't want to blame him for it. And if it was a 1-year deal, honestly, like I'd have a tough time being mad at that from a Leaf standpoint, because my argument would just be, well, what else were you going to spend the money on? Right.
That's like, what else are you going to spend the money on that potentially helps change your culture, that brings in a proven playoff performer, that's at the position that you could play him with Matthews. And I think you just have to, what you talked about, I don't think that necessarily he only just rubs off on the Nyes and the young players. Like I think he could have an influence on everybody with the way that just the way he carries himself. You know, he's not intimidated by any of this. And I don't think Toronto would intimidate him. My biggest concern with Marchand is the 37 part, honestly.
For sure.
That's really the worry. But you watch him play in these playoffs and he's been fantastic. So
it's been great because he looked old at Four Nations, I thought.
Yes. Yes. But he's had injuries and so that would be the concern, is that you pay all of this money and you make this big bet. But I look around and like, what are the other bets that they're going to be able to make? What's something else that the Leafs are going to do?
Mangiapane, you feel like you missed out on him and you're never going to recover. Like, come on. Like, let's be real.
No, there's not a lot else. I hate to be doom and gloom, but free agency is bad. And the Leafs are going to be playing that musical chairs game and could get left without a chair here.
Okay, so we got to go. We went long. But this will be the last one I do. So when it comes to free agents, and you mentioned, hey, could they address it through center? Toronto doesn't exactly have a lot of assets when it comes to being able to make a trade. So they made that move at the deadline of getting the Fraser Minton out, and they lost Grabenkin. Like, they really pilfered from that. Do you think that there's going to be reluctance from them to move Easton Cowan, or do they look at it other ways where it's like, hey, he's now upped his value with another great Mem Cup run and he would be on the table?
I think there'll be some reluctance. I think if that's happening, it's got to have to be like someone really special. I hate to revisit this, but the Scott Laughton trade looks painful now, because you could really use that first round pick to try and find a center or do something with it. Like, you know, so feels like that feels like a misspent asset given their needs this offseason. And you look at what else they have to trade, and there's not a lot, you know, and it goes back to like the Marner talk of the sign and trade. It's, you know, I see fans talking about, oh, you could trade Nick Robertson, and like a lot of what they have to trade is not going to get you anything, right? Nick and they need quality assets. You know, they need like a second line center. They need really a winger that can play with Austin Matthews. How are you going to find that? So that's the only reason that Easton Cowan would be on the table, is they just don't have a lot else to trade.
James Myrtle of The Athletic, thanks as always for making time. I'll talk to you next week for sure.
Okay. Thanks, JD.
See you, buddy. You can subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. Really helps Apple and Spotify. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Reach out. I'm always up to hearing people's opinions, people's thoughts on this stuff. But yeah, this is sort of where I'm starting to get to is, yeah, that you're gonna hear from every analytics person on the planet, like, oh, you can't pay these guys this money. It's not that binary. The markets matter. The team needs matter. The free agent pool matters. It does. This is all the cap going up matters. There's a lot of different contextual stuff that you should be kicking in rather than just kind of like setting a hard line numbers to some of these players. Anyways, I want to take a quick break and got to hit on some takeaways from last night's game 2 of the NBA Finals. That's next. So I'll save Kevin Durant rumors for tomorrow, because that's not going anywhere. Game 2 of the NBA Finals wrapped up. Beat down. That's what I expect. I want to be wrong. I'm dying to be wrong on this. Nothing would give me greater joy than getting a million messages from people going, I thought you said it's going to be a sweep and the Pacers won. I dream of this. Never has someone wanted to be more wrong than me in this situation right now. But if you're watching these games, just look for one thing. Did the Pacers get to the basket? Do their stars look normal? Do Halliburton and Siakam scare the Thunder? Are they making the Thunder forced to adjust, or is it the other way around? Like, look at the quality of the shots that the Thunder got in that game and the game prior. Shea is pouring in, 34 in game one? And 30, I don't even know, but it's tons. Cracked 30. He's been incredible. He's getting to his spots and he's hitting them. Halliburton had 3 points and two turnovers in the first half. And then he piled on some garbage time points. It was like, yeah, man, you didn't have an impact in this game. You didn't feel threatening in this game. Doesn't feel like a guy that can go toe-to-toe with them. Doesn't have the weight of like a Jokic who forced the Thunder into doing different things. Like, they do that too big lineup, and it's exactly what I thought. They can't get to the basket. And they can't hang with these guys on the glass and with their interior defense. And so the Pacers, to me, just have one path. And I'm a big believer of, if you only have one path, it's going to be impossible for you to win, because you got to do it that way every single game. And it's the way they did it in game one, which is incredible three-point variance. Thunder shot something closer to 30% from three. And those guys hit 46 and got 5 from Toppin and big shots from Nembhard. The Pacers are too far from the basket. They're relying too heavily on threes. And the only way they're going to win this series is if they hit a million of them. I'll see you tomorrow.